The following is the Tri-City TipsNet for January 27th.
Calling the Tri-City TipsNet. Calling the Tri-City TipsNet for Wednesday, January 27th, 2021. Good evening and welcome to the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet. This is Kilo Charlie 1 Tango Whiskey Romeo. My name is Tim and I'm located in Groton, Connecticut. I will be your net control station for this evening. Membership in the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club is not necessary for participation. All licensed radio amateurs are welcome to check into the net. Those that do not wish to check in are certainly welcome to listen. This net operates on the 147.060 MHz repeater with a PL tone of 156.7 Hz. It can also be heard on Echolink node W1DX-R, that's Whiskey 1 Delta X-Ray-Romeo. If needed, the secondary is the 146.67 repeater, also with a PL tone of 156.7 Hz. This net is held each Wednesday evening starting at 7 p.m. local time with various net controllers on a rotating basis. This net is intended to provide an informal operating environment for new operators as well as for experienced amateurs. The purpose of this net is to provide a venue for presenting questions and obtaining answers and advice related to amateur radio. Also to promote good fellowship among amateur radio operators and to encourage the use of good operating procedures. Let me reset the repeater. Is a directed open net, and that means we call for a round of check-ins, and when we have everyone checked in, we'll go down through the list for comments and questions. During the check-in, please state if you have any questions for the net. We'll ask you for those questions after everyone is checked in. The TIPS net has three sections. The first, the open net with rounds of questions and comments I just described. Second is a section for announcements about upcoming events and items of interest. And third, there is an opportunity for those that wish to swap, sell, or are looking for amateur radio-related items. Unless otherwise directed, all communication should be directed to the net control station. When checking into the net, please say "this is" and then release the mic button and listen to ensure no one else has called at the same time you have. If no one has, then press the mic button again and slowly give your call sign phonetically along with your name and location and if you have a comment or a question. This is the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club TipsNet with Net Control KC1TWR. My name is Tim, and I'll be your net control for this evening. We'll start taking check-ins now. Please come with your call sign phonetically, name, and location.
Oops, let's do it that way. Here is Kilo Alpha 6, Papa Delta Golf. My name is Kevin. I'm located in Norwich, Connecticut. And I have a question.
Here is. Kilo Charlie 1, Mike Victor X-Ray. Kevin in Groton, Connecticut with one question for the net.
This is Kilo 1 Delta Charlie Tango, Dave and Preston. No questions at this time.
November, Kilo, 1 Victor, Steve, Coventry.
country, no questions, but I'm expecting a phone call, so if I disappear, don't take it personally. Steve, NK1V, who may drop off with a phone call, which is what I did on the horizontal engineers and feel badly about it. But anyhow, any further check-ins before we start with the rounds of questions and comments, please come now with your call sign.
Hi, good evening, Tim, and those on the TipsNet. Hope everybody's well. Well, I tell you what, I don't know if this will sound silly, but not really intended to be. I think all of us hams, particularly if we've been on the air or licensed more than a few weeks, we start dreaming big dreams. And sometimes we while away the moments or hours when we're not doing anything else thinking about, wow, what we would really love to have, that tower, that cool antenna, that ham shack, that radio, whatever it is. And my question's predicated on that. When I daydream and think, gee, if I had a stupid amount of land and a stupid amount of money, I think of two antennas that I've always heard about, and I don't know exactly what they look like. I know they're big. I know one is bigger than the other. And I'm wondering if some of the smart folks on the net who know could give me an elevator talk or a description of the following. The one antenna that I've always heard is one of the big boys and the bad boys that if you have enough space, enough land you could put up, is a rhombic, for HF anyway, a rhombic antenna. And the other one, if you were like the government or something, or were I to start my own Air Force or Navy or something, sorry, Kevin, if I had that much resource and money in space, there's something called a curtain antenna. Not like a curtain that you hang drapes on, but a curtain antenna. And I don't know what that looks like, although I know it's extremely large. So I'd be curious if anybody wants to give an elevator talk on either or both of those antennas to educate someone who's not able to just look at a picture of them, for example. K6PDG, back to net.
Okay, good questions there, Kevin. And we'll see what people may think, but let's move on to Dave. Ask him what his question is and if he has any thoughts on your question. K1DCT, KC1TWR, and the TipsNet.
Okay, I think you skipped over Kevin X, K1DCT.
You are absolutely correct, and I put all that my comments on my paper underneath Kevin X and not under Kevin K6BDG. So now I'll have to redo my paper. Oh, well. Okay, so Kevin X, Kevin KC1MBX, what is your question and any thoughts on Kevin's K6BDG's question? Over to you, KC1MVX. This is KC1TWR in the TipsNet.
This is KC1MVX. Well, Tim, obviously I'll have to write you a demerit chit for making a mistake on the radio. Hi. Can't really be helpful with Kevin's question. Don't know anything about the rhombus antenna, or I guess rhombic. I'm going to assume it's shaped like a rhombus, which could mean anything. And at least that has four sides. And the military antennas? Well, because I actually have advanced knowledge of the military antennas. For that specific reason, I can't talk about them on the air. So, again, I can't be helpful. But if I had unlimited resources, I'd launch a satellite. Because I just want to do it. It's a thing that amateurs can do. And let me reset, and I'll ask my question. So my question is going to be about a dipole or a doublet antenna, but in my case a dipole, and in my case a bare braided wire dipole, although I guess it could apply to insulated wire, but my question is, if it gets water on it, if it gets ice on it, basically if it freezes, don't know why I'm asking that question right now, if it did, could I run my radio at high power to melt the ice, or is that not how RF energy works? And if it doesn't work like that, could I use like a battery and some wires to run a current through the wire, obviously disconnected from the radio, to melt the ice? Or would that possibly change the attenuation properties and make the dipole not work properly? Yada yada. Case, hope my question makes sense. KC1NVX, back to that.
Missed on it was where you talked about taking the wire of the antenna, wrapping it around the thermos cup and eating your coffee at the same time you're melting the ice off of it, but I'm just kidding. Okay, now we'll move on to Dave, who I apologize for hitting early, and see what he thinks of these two questions. Kevin's question about describing a rhombic and a curtain antennas, and Kevin KC1MVX's question about how to get ice off of a dipole wire, basically. K1DCT, KC1TWR, and the TIPSnet.
All right, good evening. This is K1DCT. Let's see, the rhombic. I had to Google it because I'm not intricately familiar because I've never constructed one. But if you wanted one that was good for 160 meters, the length, not the wire length, but the total space required would be about just shy of 3,000 feet. So you need depending on what frequency you want to put this thing on. If you want something on 20 meters, it's a little shy of 400 feet. So that's pretty doable. But it does need to be terminated in a resistor, obviously a non-wire wound resistor, and fed with a balun. So it can get quite sizable. I don't know if I'm hitting all of Kevin Six's points here on the rhombic, but certainly doable, and just need some serious amount of wire. Depending on what wavelength, I gave you the four wavelength version, so you get, depending on how many wavelengths you want to make this thing at, there's a multitude of possibilities. The curtain, I guess you could just, I don't have any real hands-on knowledge of the curtain antenna, but I've seen them. There's a shortwave station somewhere down in Pennsylvania off of, it's 84, 86, but it's right along the highway there. And you can see this curtain antenna hanging up, and it's pretty impressive looking. So that's that. So moving on, let's see, to the Kevin X's question. Okay, as far as the dipole, if you get ice on it, you can operate it normally. You might notice the SWR is a little funky for a while. The RF energy will melt it because RF does get hot. If you grab that wire when you're transmitting, it feels about the same as putting your hand on a stove burner. So it can be done. You can't do a dipole with a battery because there's no closed loop. You know, it goes up your coax or whatever your feed line is. The two ends that never touch. So you wouldn't be able to do it that way. The RF would probably get it off of there, but honestly, I've lived around here far too long and have never really had a lot of ice build up on my antennas. So, not something I give a lot of thought to. But I guess I am now. So with that, maybe somebody else will pop in with some more intelligent answers. K1DCT, back to net.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. Very good. And I think before we get to Steve, I think we'll do another call out, see if there's anybody else out there who'd like to get added to the list here for making comments, or if they have any questions they'd like to bring. This is the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club Wealth TipsNet. And if anybody would like to join, why don't you come with your call sign phonetically now?
Release They're like bullet-style connectors and a giant magnet. I may have explained this before under that, on a steel plate so that when enough ice builds up or any debris, it'll simply disconnect. And hopefully I'm not transmitting at that moment, but I usually am cautious of that during ice or windstorms. So they are good concepts. I've seen other devices that have melting things, you know, heat that come through, and I'm sure there's heat there. And I just don't know how much, for the cost of putting up a dipole antenna, effort to I don't think we get that much ice. That's a critical thing. And I do, actually, with a few adjustments, I work through snowstorms and ice storms on my doublet, and actually sometimes it works better when it's covered with, you know, when it's wet. Back to that, and K1B.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Good comments there. You mentioned about a square antenna. If you ever get a chance to talk to Vincent, W100W up in Baltic, I had an occasion the end of last year to be up at his house, and he has a very nice square antenna out his backyard. He happens to have a square, large lawn area there bordered by trees, so he was able to put up a nice square antenna. Uses that up through, I know he uses it through 80, I don't know if he uses it on 160 or not, but he seems to be very happy with it on most bands. He says it's been up there about 4 or 5 years, and none of the weather has brought it down, so he's quite happy with it. Okay, we've reached the bottom of the list, and we already did one call out. I'll do another one in a moment or two, but let's circle back to the top of the list and see if Kevin got... Is it all satisfied with what he's heard so far, or maybe he's got to continue in asking? And he might have some thoughts on Kevin K. C1MVX's question about getting ice off the dipole. So over to you, Kevin, KA6PDG. This is KC1TWR in the TIPSnet.
Thanks, Tim. Well, let's do ice on the dipole first, and I think I would align my thinking with Dave, K1DCT, much as I hate to admit it. I think that's the succinct and reasonable thought, and I have gotten RF burns. I could tell the story if need be, but I won't unless asked. It wasn't fun, and it was a little embarrassing, but anyway... to the rhombic and the curtain, I guess what I'm most interested in is what they look like physically and what they're made of. Dave went to that a little bit, and obviously the rhombic with the wire and the balun and the resistor, I think he said, or capacitor, I think it was a resistor. But I'm mainly interested in what they look like. So a rhombic antenna is typically square. That's what I'm putting together. And when Dave, when you said 400 feet for a 20-meter version, obviously depending on what light wave, what type of, 5/8 or full wave, but that was 400 feet that would be in a square, not 400 feet of wire just stretched out straight. So when you said 3,000 feet, I believe you meant 3,000 square feet. I'm just trying to learn what they look like, and then the science can come later. But the answers you guys gave were fine, and learning is a process. It doesn't all happen at once. KA6PDG, back to net.
KC1MVX, my first thought when you were talking about trying to melt the wire, whether you could run a current through it, my first thought was to take some of that wire, leave it outside about four or five feet of it, let it get the ice on it, get a car battery, hook it up to either end or what have you, and see what happens when you connect the wires. Because if you were going to run current through it, obviously you'd have to have the other end grounded or come back to the battery. And I also was interested. that I think it was Steve that mentioned the fact that sometimes with ice on the antenna, on the dipole, he actually got better reception or better use out of it. So maybe you don't want to take the ice off. Anyhow, let's see what you think about all the comments that have been made. And if you have any other questions, KC1MVX, KC1TWR, and the TIPS net.
KC1MVX, Tim, you're a madman. I love it. I want to say if I were to do a 12-volt car battery straight to even one leg, you know, end-to-end, 51 feet, even at 12 volts, what's cold cranking amps of an average car battery? Around 800 amps? They could probably put out more than that, depending on the resistance. I haven't done the power conversion, but that has to be more than the 1,500 watts that thing's rated for. I could turn it into an Edison-style heating element. I could make light with it. That'd be cool. No, I'd probably do it with a smaller, you know, not even ATV battery, but one of the little ones that you put in series to make a storage battery, or even just a 9-volt. And, of course, I know it's an open circuit. I would just put wires end-to-end, connect it to, like, a couple 9-volts or something. But knowing that RF is enough to do it, I wasn't sure if RF needed a, like, another conductor to create a magnetic field to make the heat, or if it would just make heat. Again, not an electrician. Again. Net control. Did my last transmission go through? Because I didn't get a courtesy tone at the end of it. Over.
We did not hear you turn it back to net control. You seem to just kind of drop off the end of the earth there for a couple of seconds.
Okay, good. I was just resetting. But anyways, okay, so for Kevin. So basically, imagine one of those interstate antenna, like electrical antenna poles, you know, hundreds of feet high, and you're taking 2 to 4 of those to spread this curtain, and it is basically like a curtain. You know, it's just wires upon wires upon wires in a sort of grid array, and it's actually called a curtain array, not a curtain antenna, although I did get some interesting pictures of shower curtains with radio antennas and towers on them, so maybe I'll get one of those. And, you know, it's like taking a city block and putting it vertical, or even bigger. I would say they're the size of a city block or bigger, and the towers that are holding them up are the type of poles that would hold up interstate, you know, the massive transmission lines for power that just run across the country. Huge, impressive thing. Let me reset one more time. And I think the way that I understood its scale is I saw a picture of one of them being demolished because it was dangerously broken. And as it's crashing to the ground, trees are just being thrown up around it like a tornado hit, and these trees look minuscule, like they're twigs compared to the thing. KC1MVX, back to net.
Okay, thank you for that description, Kevin. Quite interesting. And it'd be interesting to see if you do experiment trying to get ice off of your antenna, how much voltage needs to be applied over what period of time to remove what layer of ice. That would be interesting. Okay, if my notes are correct, let's see, now we go from Kevin here, we do Kevin there, then we go to back to Dave, K1DCT. This is KC1TWR and the TIPS net.
Alright, this is K1DCT, and yes, I did forget to describe the curtain antenna, but Kevin X took care of that. Yes, it does. It looks very much like a curtain. Just, you know, there's actually multiple elements in there. It's not just, you know,
like a bed spring, not loading up the bed springs, and just back to the rhombic for another round here. If you want to make a four wavelength rhombic for 160 meters, you would need to, after it left the ballon and got to the antenna, from the one end of the antenna to the other, you would need almost 3,000 feet to erect this thing. And it is kind of like a square that's been squished down, so yes, like a rhomboid. Or a rhombus, depending if you're going uptown and you take the rhombus. Oh, bad, bad. Anyway, so you can make this rhombic in different wavelengths, and which of course varies with size. So, and you can do it unterminated. I did say that had to be terminated. If you terminate it, it makes it unidirectional. Heading away from the terminated end. So otherwise it's unidirectional, bidirectional like a dipole. So, but you can get some gain out of it. So, it'd be interesting. But I need to get back to the original Kevin 6 question. If I had, unlimited funds and everything else, well, the first thing I would do is I would have a call sign that starts with Zulu Foxtrot, and then antenna wouldn't matter what I put up. Back to net, K1DCT.
Okay, thank you for your comments there, Dave. Let's move on to Steve, see what he has to add to all this. NK1V, KC1TWR, and the TIPSnet.
NK1V. Not too much more to add. I was just thinking about both those antennas. They're quite impressive, but I don't think I'll ever get either one. And yeah, the Kevin's description of the curtain is exactly as I remember it. It was the one that I've seen up in Nova Scotia. It's weird the way that the towers are placed, but it's hard to tell because you're going by, you don't actually go around it, you're just going by it, so it's hard to see. It's far away and very big, so it's a little bit deceiving. But I guess it would be a curtain, it would look like a curtain, and it is, an array. So I have nothing else of any use on the subject. Sure, would like a big old loop though, but I don't think I got 3,000 feet of space. Probably not. Back to that, NK1B. Okay, thank you, Steve. This is KC1TWR in the TIPSnet. I think I just heard a voice in there. It might have been Valhalla cutting in. Did anyone else want to check into the TIPSnet? We're open to all amateur radio operators, regardless of their age, regardless of their experience, regardless of their call sign. But please come with your call sign now.
Here is Whiskey One, Romeo Papa Queen, Bob in Oakdale. Good evening. No questions.
Okay, Net recognizes Bob in Oakdale, WNRPQ. Any further check-ins before we continue? Please come with your call sign now. That have been being asked, one from Kevin K6PDG. He was looking for basically a description, without getting technical, just a ballpark generic what the heck does the thing look like description, and that was me asking the what the heck, and I shouldn't have used that. Looking for a concerning a rhombic antenna and a curtain antenna, and we've had some good descriptions that have come in. Maybe you want to add something to that. And Kevin, KC1MVX, was asking basically how to get ice off of a dipole, and we've had some good, interesting discussion about that. You're certainly welcome to comment about either of those questions or anything else you'd like to bring to the net. W1RPQ, KC1TWR, and the TIPS net.
KC1TWR, this is W1RPQ. First, the curtain antenna. Those are really cool in their design, and I've heard you guys talk about them a little bit here. Basically, it's about, anywhere between 8 and 15 or 20. There's a Russian one that's very, very big. They're about 8 to 20 dipole antennas. Dipole antennas on towers that are just regular dipoles. But what really makes the curtain effect is the reflector that's built behind them, and that is just a series of grid wire behind them at the same height. Vertical lines that run back and forth that create the reflective part of the curtain antenna. So it's multiple dipoles with that curtain behind it, and that's where you can see, if you look at some of the pictures, of why it has that effect when you look from that long distance. Very expensive, made a long time ago. Shortwave was the real big thing for it. I know the Russian one was for the Radio Russia or whatever that was over there using that. But kind of a cool design, but yeah, kind of big. As far as getting ice off of my antenna, I just kind of wait for it to thaw and come off. I don't really notice much of a difference when I'm transmitting, so I will just wait, and I won't risk trying to ruin anything by, one, running my radio at high power just to burn it off, because it really doesn't affect it. So I heard Dave earlier talking about that. Yeah, I'm just patient. It'll come off. And the rhombic antenna, I know there's a couple out west that are some big ones. Let me reset. Yeah, there's a couple of big ones. I think it might have been in QST or one of those magazines I saw several years ago, where they put up four big ROM antenna towers quite a distance apart, and have made some pretty large ones. And I guess they're very effective out west because of the flat ground in the open area. But they come in all shapes and sizes too. But I have seen an article or two about those units out west. And again, you got to have a lot of money to build four of those towers that far apart to get everything to work. Other than that, that's all I've got for right now. So let me send it back to Net Control. This is W1RPQ.
Okay, thank you, Bob. That's a good description. I appreciate that. We're going to go back around to the top of the list. I do have a question to ask if anybody has any thoughts on. Basically, how many call signs have you had? Do you remember what they are? And do you remember why you changed them? I'll start very briefly. I've only had two. The one that you know me currently is KC1TWR. And my original, which was KC1BNT. And just the B can be, it was Baker November Tango, but that could become as Papa M, whatever, Michael, and then T, or Papa again. So I decided to change it and pick my initials. Why not? But we'll pass that question on to Kevin, KA6PDG, or he may want to comment on Bob's comment on the antennas. KA6PDG, KC1TWR, and the TIPS net.
Well, yeah, real quickly, thank you, Bob, and Dave and others for the excellent description on the curtain. The rhombus, I'm getting more and more an idea as I hear the conversation, so I think I got a rough thing. Two questions regarding that conversation, and this may be wildly ignorant, but I do not know what a rhombus or a rhomboid is. Maybe it's a geographic shape. I just am not familiar with the terms. And Dave, I was having trouble with you were saying should be terminated and shouldn't be terminated, and they both sounded the same to me. So am I correct in my understanding that if the rhombic antenna is not terminated at the other end, that it then would be bidirectional? And that's what I took away. Let's see now, what was the latest? I've only had the one call sign. I have no desire to change it. I thought about it when I moved back east, but I wanted to keep the call sign that's adjacent to my brother's call. And let me reset here. I have had over the years, I used to have an actual FCC-issued CB call sign for 11 meters back in the day when they issued those. And that's been a long time, long, long time. And I do, well, no, I can't say I currently have, although it's still listed on the FCC database under my name, but I let the license expire. I do have a GMRS call sign. I believe those are the only call letters or call signs that I personally have had. K6PDG, back to net.
Okay, very good, Kevin. Thank you for that information. And all this talk about a rhombic antenna and a rhombic type of thing makes me think of networking and the fact that I wonder if there are any Romulans out there. Okay, that was a bad joke, if you know networking. But let's move on to Kevin, KC1MVX. I happen to know that he probably has only had one call sign, but maybe he's got some other thoughts as far as the rhombic antenna or as anything else. KC1MVX, KC1TWR, and the TIPSnet.
A surprise for you, Tim. This is KC1MVX. First off, Kevin, a rhombus is just, it's a four-sided parallelogram. So technically a square is a rhombus, rectangle is a rhombus. Generally when you see people draw them, it's like a rectangle where the top is shorter than the bottom, and therefore to compensate, the two sides come out as an angle. The traditional, like, drawn diamond shape, you know, with the four sides can be a rhombus. So it can be anything with that's a four-sided thing where the angles all add up to whatever, 360. Sorry. Let me reset. I know I didn't describe the rhombus really great, but I'm not a geometry major. So, to answer Tim's question, I've had quite a few. Technically, my first call sign was when I got my private pilot's license back in 2008. Although, the way that really works is the call signs attached to the aircraft, not to the pilot, typically. There are some exceptions, but in my case, it was the aircraft. I only ever flew two aircraft, the training Cessna that I flew to get my hours, which was always the same craft, and then the one time I rented a plane, which was also a Cessna, to just take a little weekend trip up north in California, and then I never flew again because it was just too nerve-wracking, too stressful for me, and time-consuming and expensive. I also have a GMRS call sign. I have my amateur call sign. I don't know what my GMRS call sign is off the top of my head. And I have my Air Force Mars call sign, which I can't say what it is. So there you go. KC1AVX, back to net.
Okay, thank you for the description of the rhomboid, or rhombus, and also thank you for letting me know that you have had more than one call sign. Very good. Okay, let's move on to Dave and get his comments for this round. K1DCT, KC1TWR, and the TIPSnet.
Oh, good evening again to all. This is K1DCT. Let's see. Yeah, just to add to the rhombus, if you think of Kevin, Kevin 6, if you think of a square, you know, normally, you know, there's one flat line on the bottom and one on the top and then the two interconnecting sides. Turn the whole thing up on that one point, whether you rotate left or right, you're up on a point and then it's considered a rhombus. So, let's see, call signs. I've had two ham call signs, my present one, and my original call sign was Whiskey Bravo 1, Golf Zulu Charlie, GZC. So you think you could get mixed up with the call sign you had, Tim, you know, you're saying GZC, so that could be a whole bunch of things on, you know, when you say it out loud. Conditions aren't perfect, so. But I changed it because the vanity call sign came out and I could get my initials, and I said, well, you know, why not? Before somebody else does. So so I did. That was quite a while ago. And like Kevin X, yes, when I was flying, used the call sign of the plane, and because if you get a commercial pilot's license, you're supposed to get a what's called a restricted radio telephone license, and that's for you to operate the radio. But I wouldn't have to get those because I have a commercial FCC license, which is bigger and better. So, and I did at one time have a Marine. You know, a boating license for radio when I had a boat. So, but that's long expired. So that's about it, I think. I've been called a lot of things, but most recently I've been called K1DCT. Back to net.
And I wanted to get my father's initials, but that was already taken by somebody else. Not that he ever had an amateur radio license, but he did work down at Bell Labs in the Pure Research Department, and just to honor him, I was going to do that, but unfortunately I was unable to. Okay, let's move on to Steve. Actually, before we do that, are there any other stations that would like to check into the TIPSnet? If so, please come with your call sign now.
Call signs. Yeah, if I got my first one, which was the issued one, the KC1HEB. Actually, I'm all posted up there. And then I went for a vanity one. I got my general one. I got my tech. And for some reason I thought Whiskey 1 Sierra Victor Charlie would be good, but it it didn't work out as much as I cared to. It's not very nice on CW, and it's just was I was just tripping over it. And so I wanted to go with a 1x2, which is very difficult to get. And so I started looking for 1x2s and 2x1s and just kept looking and looking. And this one came up, and it has absolutely no meaning. It was relatively, it was fairly decent for CW, and I kind of liked the Kilo and the Victor. And so it was catchy, and it seems to work. It seems to be effective when I'm calling CQ and things like that. So it seems to work. And I do carry a, what's that thing, the GMRS license. I have that up here, too. It's some weird call sign, WRAC something. And the only reason I really got that is because we do a lot of that camping, messing around with those radios and such, and I just didn't want to be, let's say, caught with my pants down with a bunch of people and those radios and jeopardize my amateur license by not having the proper license for using the other radios. So I pay them their $75 every however many years and go on my merry way, because we do use them quite a bit. So although I might get the grandkids their amateur license before my wife. Back to that NK1B.
Okay, thank you for your comments, Steve, and you'll be happy to know that when the new charges go in from the FCC for your amateur radio license, you'll have to pay $35 every 10 years. But for your GMRS license, that's going to drop to $35 every 10 years. So that kind of works out, balances out for you. You won't notice a difference. Okay, let's move on to Bob. See what he has for this route. W1RPQ, KC1TWR, and the tips net.
TWR, this is W1RPQ. Well, let's see, call signs. First call sign was KC1IUI when I got my technician's license. When I got my extra, I wanted a vanity license, and I got K1RMN, which was my initials, so I thought that was pretty cool, and I was ready to stick with that one. And then when my dad passed last February, I thought the best way I could honor him was to go for his call sign, W1RPQ, and it took about a month and a half, and the FCC gave me that call sign. So this is where I am, and that's where I'm going to stay now. So that was easy. And just to confuse the waters about Euclidean geometry, you guys were talking about the rhombus, and somebody mentioned a rhomboid. A rhomboid is basically the same thing, only the sides are not equal. So just throw that one out there to make it much more muddy. All right, this is W1RPQ. Back to net.
Well, thank you, Bob. And to be honest, your description makes me think that a rhomboid is really nothing more than a square that really got drunk. Okay, we've reached the bottom of the list. I think we've reached the end of the first section. Last call for comments or questions or check-ins for the first section. Please come with your call sign now. Announcements about upcoming events or items of interest. If so, please call now. Okay, I will say that there are two items of interest. One is this weekend coming up is the Winter Field Day, and true to fashion, it's going to be very cold, colder than we have been recently. Next week. So button up, buttercup, and you just stay inside at home and join the Winter Field Day, or get out there in your tent and do what you can. Also, on February 13th, there will be a amateur radio exam session up at the East Great Plains Fire Department. And anybody that, if you know of anybody looking to advance their license or to get a license, have them check out the tricityarc.net, that's TRICITYARC.net, webpage for details. Let's go into the third section. Is there anyone that has anything that they wish to swap, sell, or looking for? Only dealing with amateur-related items, though. Please call now. Related items, or else if you listen to the Vickersons, Blanche would definitely be offered up for sale. Okay, before we close the net, any last check-ins or comments or crosstalk, please call now.
Okay, 6PDG with a question for Dave. DCTK 6PDG, when did you change call signs? The reason I'm asking is that old call sign sounds very familiar. I moved back to Connecticut in 94, and I moved to Norwich in 96, and became active with the Traffic Net, and even was net manager for a short time while it was still the race on Traffic Net. And I want to say you used to check into the Traffic Net with that call sign. Otherwise, maybe I'm thinking of when I used to visit here prior to moving back here and would bring my HT. Anyway, I was just curious when you got the DCT call, because the old one sounds familiar. Or did I say that already? K6PDG, you can hand it back to Net Control when you're done, Dave.
DCT, the station formerly known as WB1GZC. Yeah, it was in the 90s. I already had gotten my extra, and so it was somewhere between 92 and 96. I just looked through my collection of old licenses I have tucked away here, and in 92 I got my extra, and it looks like 96. Was when I was issued the first license with my present call sign. So yes, I was GZC for a long time, probably too long. Certainly back then, that's when they started those N. So I could have gotten an N1 something at some point, but I didn't really want to do that. So. That's that story, as sad as it is. Back to net, K1DCT.
Okay, thank you very much, Dave. And I'm sure Kevin found that of interest. For those of you who know that EchoLink has been having some issues, and I'm not talking about just this EchoLink, I'm talking about all EchoLink. It seems to be back and operating again. However, I've noticed on the desktop software, usually there's little TX, red TX or a green RX, I believe it was, that would pop up on part of the application to let you know when you were transmitting or receiving. And those are not there any longer. So I don't know if EchoLink is fully recovered or still having a few issues in the background. Okay. That was the last call. If you have no further check-ins, I'm going to go ahead and close the net at this time. I'd like to thank all who participated in the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club Tip Set, which would be Kevin, Dave, Steve, and Bob. And also thank all those who stood by and listened whilst we conducted the net. Hopefully you learned something. also thanks to W1AN for allowing us to use the W1DX repeater. And thank Joe K1IKE for the Echolink connection. And Kevin KA6PDG for recording these tips nets and making them available on his website. That's alphamichael1700.org/tipsnet.
W1RPQ.
Okay, I'm not sure what happened there. I think the station was IDing, but I'm not sure. Anyhow, this is the Tri-City Amateur Radio Club sponsors this net and has their meeting on the second Tuesday of each month, normally at the American Red Cross office, but lately it's been on Zoom. The meetings will be posted, the Zoom link will be posted on their website a day or two in advance. It's always on the second Tuesday of the month at 7 p.m. and it's open to all interested persons, licensed or not. Information about the club may be found at www.tricityarc.net. This net will meet again next Tuesday at 7 p.m. on this frequency. I now return the repeater to regular amateur use. This is KC1TWR wishing everyone a good evening at 73.